Hello, and welcome to everyone listening to the Written in Melanin podcast, the place where you come to get your weekly dose of melanated creativity. I'm your host, CM Lockhart, an author of fantasy books featuring Black girls who aren't all that nice, and the owner of the Melanin Library, an online database of books written by Black authors. And in this space, I share with you everything I've learned on my journey as a Black and indie author. I'm glad you're here. And welcome to a very fun episode of the podcast, you guys. I am here today with Tamara Jarrett, and they are an indie bookseller and author based in Chicago. A Twilight era reader with an academic background in writing, they love combining speculative and literary tropes within the paranormal romance genre. Sharp and soft sapphic pairings are their weakness. Vampires and demons are their best friends. And The Fall That Saved Us is their debut novel and a finalist for the Indie Ink Award. And I am so excited to have them on the podcast. Like, y'all don't even understand. I have been looking forward to this interview for like weeks. So welcome to the podcast, Tamara.
Thank you so much for having me. I've also been looking forward to it. So it's a joy to be here.
Okay. This is going to be great. I'm so sorry you guys missed when we actually started talking when they first hopped on the podcast. And I was just like, and they were like, it was great. It was wholesome. Anyway, that being said, for our listeners, will you please introduce yourself, assuming that for whatever reason they have not found out about how amazing you are?
Thank you so much. I'm Tamara Jarrett. I love writing just like sapphic romance featuring Black characters and just, you know, writing the books that I have always wanted to read. So yes, I love the sharp sapphic pairings, vampires, demons. That is my thing. I have an academic background in writing, which I think makes my work kind of in this weird in-between space as far as genre. I really love and read a lot of literary fiction. I like bringing those influences to paranormal romance, which results in some fun things that are not exactly to market, but I have a lot of fun with it.
And I think that's the important thing because, honestly, I have found recently that I prefer books that are not written to market, that are just like, this book is what it's supposed to be because this is how the author and the creator imagined it, right? It's not stuffed, I don't say stuffed, or chiseled down to fit into like a really neat box or whatever. It's just like, it works the way that it does because it's supposed to, because like I said, I read that Look Inside feature for The Fall That Saved Us, and I was just like, this prose, this writing, this is not like anything that I have encountered before. And I was immediately like, I want to read more of this. And if you guys are listening to the podcast, y'all hopefully know me and understand that when I say that I'm enjoying this book and that I have been excited about this book and that this book has really like sucked me into it, y'all know I don't say that about many books. Like, I don't say I'm a hater, but I don't like many books. Not enough to actually be like, go read it. So it's absolutely wonderful. Like, I just want to give you your flowers. Like, your prose is like, it's stunning. It really paints a world in a way that I haven't seen before. So kudos.
Thank you so much. I feel like I have to thank literally all of my mentors and my teachers for that went through with their, you know, kind pencil. It wasn't a red pen, it was a pencil, and literally marked up every line of my prose and were like, this is where you can cut back, this is where you need to lean in, and just like kind of building that instinct for that sound. So thanks to all of them.
Absolutely. And there are so many things that I want to talk to you about, and so I'm going to touch on what you just said for a moment. You mentioned having, you know, your mentors and such. And one thing that I'm really big on, especially within like the Black author community, is like, you need community. You need people to lean on, to tap on their shoulder and be like, hey, can you help me with this? Can you be a second set of eyes? How do I put it? You can't do this journey by yourself, essentially. And so one of the things that I get, especially from newer writers, is like, well, how do you find that community? And I know that it's kind of different for everyone. And I know you said that you have a background in academic literature, so I don't know if that leans into this, but how did you find your community, those mentors and people to kind of help you strengthen your writing?
So there are so many different routes to take, right? And I feel like before I say what I'm going to say, I want to preface it with there are so many ways in and there are so many ways to build your community. And so the way when I was a younger writer, the only way that I saw in was like the traditional, more traditional path, which was you go to school and you like study under people who've published books, who've gotten the like thumbs up from the industry, from the powers of academia, whatever. And so I know that there are like so many writers, especially like younger writers, who think that they need to go to some expensive program or like go to school to be a writer, which like you absolutely don't have to. So I just want to say that before I say that my path was like that more traditional path of like, I applied to an MFA. I did one of those intensive 6-week programs. I graduated from the Odyssey Writing Workshop, which is very similar to, if you've heard of Clarion, that's for like SFF writers. So that is the route that I took in. And a lot of the people that I met were my cohort in my MFA, my cohort from Odyssey. And then I had a slight detour into the games industry. So I found writers there who I worked with who also helped me strengthen my prose. And then when I finally decided to self-publish, that was when I really started like more intentionally, I think, looking for the community that would really like see what I was doing and accept my work for what it was and not try to change it into something else. So that's what I really love about the indie community, is everyone has been so incredibly generous to me. The communities that I ended up finding were kind of just like organically on Twitter and Instagram, where I found indie authors that I looked up to who were doing something similar to like either like their career. I was like, I could see like that's where I want to be, or their writing spoke to me in some way. And I just saw what communities they were involved in. There's a lot of great writer discords. So I hopped in there and just kind of lurked for a while to see what everyone was like talking about and like their own publishing journeys and their recommendations for, you know, what worked for them on their path. And I love that everyone there always emphasized, you know, like, this is what I did. This is what worked for me for my book. This might work for you. So here's like step-by-step process of what I did. Not saying that that is the way, but that is a way and it worked for me. And so, yeah, just like those small, like queer indie author communities were really amazing to find.
There's so much in there that I'm just like, I hope you guys are listening, because as you were talking and explaining it, I was just like, yes. And I know if you guys are like listening to the podcast and you're not watching this on YouTube, you can't see me like nodding my head the entire time. But it's one of those things like where everything you said, I was just like, yeah, that's exactly how it works. Like, especially when you mentioned, you know, like lurking in the Discord, like, if you are a lurker, it's fine. I mean, at some point, I think it is important to take that jump to interact with people, because there is benefit in that. But also, all of us are introverts, you guys. We all have to get comfortable in a space before we jump headfirst into it. And I say all of us, generalizing. So if you're an extrovert, please do not argue with me, because I'm an introvert and I will not argue back. So it's just one of those things where it's just like, everything you said, and even the part where, you know, you talked about the traditional path going into it, because I feel like, especially within the indie and self-publishing worlds, sometimes it's this idea that there's no benefit to those things. And it's like, there is. It's like, you have to determine what that benefit is for yourself. And if that's something that you want to do, if you want to go get your MFA, if you want to do a program, if you want to study the craft in that way, I mean, we're all studying the craft. It just depends on how you want to go about it. And if that works for you, by all means, do it, right? And so I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I know a lot of people are self-taught in the, you know, self-published in indie space. And then also just that aspect of, you know, searching for community. Because sometimes you find communities and it's like, it's great, but for a moment or for an era of your writing, but then, you know, you migrate, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's okay. I think that's something that as a community, we should probably talk about a little bit more, because it's just like, you can have your friends and such, but it's also, I think, really important to acknowledge when it's like, okay, this community that I was in, that I first found, isn't necessarily where I need to remain. And so finding a community that continues to work with you and fostering new relationships. I don't know. I know sometimes for introverts that could be like, oh no, I'm betraying my friends. And I was like, it's not. You're just doing what's best for you. And also that piece that you mentioned about, hey, like, this is what I did, but it's a journey. Every author is on their own individual journey. And what works for one person is not necessarily guaranteed to work for the next person. There are usually bits and pieces you can take from everyone to apply to yourself. But the thing that I love about being an author, especially an indie author, is just like, take what works and leave what doesn't, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. My MFA was not entirely positive. I did a lot of fighting to advocate for my interests and what I wanted to write. And what I took from that was, you know, like, I did come out of it with like some concrete things that really did help me. Like the professor who was like really into line edits, like she really, I think, like helped me polish my prose. However, the intense genre bias in a lot of MFAs, I warn a lot of people when they ask me about, you know, do you recommend getting an MFA? I would say definitely research the program, because a lot of them are biased against anything that is not literary fiction. So, you know, there were great things that I learned from that program. I'm very thankful to those professors, but there was also a lot that I was like, I understand this works for you, but I will be leaving this advice, you know, because there's so much pressure, of course, to traditionally publish if you're in an MFA, to get an agent in a very like specific way. And that's all advice that like I felt like to be a real writer, to be a valid writer, I had to do those things. But that wasn't true. So,
ooh, that is such a word. Because I have talked to so many authors, because for many of us, especially in this era, right, of our lives, right, and who, like you said, Twilight era readers, when it was big, right, we're now writers, and it's like, for so many of us, we saw those published books, and we're like, this is how it's done. Like, this is what defines a real book, a real author, a real writer, a real career. And things have obviously drastically changed since that era was at its peak, right? And so now it's like, as adults actually in this space, it's like you have to kind of reframe your thoughts. And it's like, there are so many more ways to this than there ever were before. And to just not, I don't want to say beat yourself up, but to kind of let go of this idea that it had to have been done this exact way that I had in my mind when I first imagine this for myself when I was a teenager. Reality doesn't necessarily line up with that as in adulthood.
Yes.
Right? And then also, I wanted to touch on this question because it was asked, what is an MFA? And a slight plug, if you're listening to this, we do have a backstage. So if you join the Patreon, you can actually be backstage when we record these live. Just throwing that out there. But what is an MFA? I'm going to let you explain it since you actually have one.
Yeah, so MFA just stands for Masters of Fine Arts. So literally any art, you can probably get an MFA in it. And it is more focused on like studio work. So you can get an MA in creative writing. And I have an MFA, which that side of it tends to be more focused on like workshop. So it is just a master's program. So it's graduate school. You go, you take your workshop classes. There are different structures for how to run a workshop. A lot of MFAs go with the Iowa Writers Workshop method. And so you bring your stories in however often your professor dictates, and you all just spend 3 hours in a room discussing the like two stories of the week and giving your fellow writers, you know, feedback on like, what you love, what's working, where you think there could be improvement. So yeah, it is just a graduate degree.
Okay. I'm glad you explained that, because I also feel like that's something that a lot of authors talk about. Like, maybe I should. And it's one of those things that's kind of like in smoke and mirrors. Because like you say, people say, research the program. But it's also like, if you don't know what you're looking for, you don't know what you're looking for.
Yes. If you don't, if you don't have the words, how do you ask the question, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So that being said, if you're listening to this, I don't know anything about an MFA. I don't have one, not looking to get one. So in the future, I suggest that you reach out to Tamara Jarae and ask about it if you have questions.
I will. I have so much to say about MFAs. If you're curious, you can DM me.
And there you go. There you go. And of course, you guys know that the links to everything will be in the show notes, or if you're watching this on YouTube, it'll be in the description box. So that being said, I kind of want to talk about the fall that saved us just a little bit. Mostly like, what was the inspiration behind it, but also kind of touching on what you said before, what kind of pushed you to separate yourself from this idea of there's only one way to publish the book to, okay, I'm going to self-publish, or I'm going to indie publish this, to being nominated for an Indie Ink Award, because that's amazing. Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That was so unexpected. My journey with this book, it was a long journey. I think I started writing this in 2020. And so I just wanted to write something fun and indulgent. I was super deep into Good Omens fandom at the time. And so I love the archetype of just like angel demon romance just has an appeal. You know, it's just that opposites attract thing. It's the forbidden love. It's the, you know, there's so much there that I just like love in that trope. And so I originally wrote this as a novella. And like, before I got to the last chapter, I was like, this book is maybe like, it's too sad, it's too heavy. Who wants to read about sad angel girl? I don't know what I'm doing with this. And so I ended up abandoning the project. And I was in the games industry at the moment, so I was focusing on that career. And then I came back to it almost exactly a year later, October 2021, finally finished the book. I was still very much in the mindset of, there is one way to publish a book that is valid. So I started querying to traditional publishers, to editors and agents. And I kept, at that point, I was getting responses that were like, this is really good, we like it, but we want it to be, can you make it longer? Can you like, you know, do more things with this? So this happened a couple times, and so brought the book up to its current word count, because I kept getting revise and resubmit requests. And then I would resubmit it, and either the editor had left the publishing, left that house. So then I don't really think there was anyone who's interested in that project anymore, or agents who had decided to take their list in a different direction. And so at this point, I was extremely discouraged. I was back at, who wants to read this book about the sad angel girl? And then at that point, that was when I started reading indie romance. A friend I worked with in the games industry recommended her friend, who is an indie, small press indie author. And I started reading their work, and I was like, oh my God, I've never read anything like this. I've never read anything like this from like a major, like big five publishing house. It was very clear. It was dark. It was amazing. And so I was like, oh my gosh. Then I was like, who is this author's community? And that's when I started doing my social media research and seeing like, who is this author? Like, who are they like sharing? What are their recommendations? What are they interested in? And from there, I was like, I just kept finding amazing books that were, you know, either published by small presses or were self-published that were what I wanted to do with my work. And so I was like, oh, that, I think that was the light bulb moment for me, because I was like, I feel like I'm not getting in. I'm like banging on the doors of Trad Pub and just like feeling extremely discouraged and maybe like maybe my book isn't, it's not good after all, and, you know, and then finding books that were my comp titles that were indie published. I was like, this is clearly where I belong. These people are badass and I want to be like them. So yeah, that was the journey. Then I did a ton of research because I was like, this book is my baby. It's my first book. You know, you put so much energy into your first book.
Yeah.
So that was researching, what did I, you know, like, I had this very clear picture of the cover. And yeah, just going from there, I found an amazing editor. And yeah, it was just an amazing process. I think it gave me a lot of just like agency, and during a time where I felt like I was losing that in my games career. So it was just very nice to have complete control over that process.
If you guys are listening to this, I know you can't see the giant smile on my face, but this whole like explanation, it's just like, I don't know, something about the being happy with what you are writing and kind of realizing your agency and the, I don't say the totality of what publishing is, but kind of like seeing both sides of it and not necessarily hating one side or the other, but also that moment when, like you said, you're banging on the door and you're like, but wait a second, these people out here are having a great time, and you're just being like, I'm just gonna stay out here with them. It's like that moment, but also it's, how do I explain it? It's like you touched on this idea of, not even idea, but this moment of you read an indie book and it kind of just changed your perspective of how you were viewing books and publishing and how to go about things. And you specifically said that you hadn't read anything like it and you loved it. And it's one of the reasons why I go so hard for indie authors, because it's like, you know, we're writing things that don't show up in traditional publishing. And it's such an interesting thing to watch, especially in 2024, which, unpopular opinion, maybe, maybe not, I don't know. But it's such an interesting to watch because it's like they're kind of imploding, because I feel like so many of these publishers are putting out such similar books to each other, where people will see it and then they'll see the cover and they'll be so excited for the book and it just won't deliver on what they had hoped it was. And then they'll be like, but we wanted this, like it had the potential, but then it just fell short of that. And then in my mind, I'm like, well, if it had been an indie book, it probably wouldn't have fell short of that potential. Just throwing that out there. Because kind of what I said at the beginning of this is like, when you're an indie author, and like you said, you have that agency, you have complete creative control. The book is what it's supposed to be. It's not forced to be something that traditional publishing can market, you know, because that's a completely different mindset versus writing a good book versus writing something that's marketable. There's a reason why we had the Twilight era, right? Love Twilight. I was a Twilight girly at one point. Uh-huh. But as an adult, I think we can all safely say that Twilight is not the best written book there is. There are a couple of questions that probably should have been asked, but it was marketed really well and it became like a touch point for an entire generation of readers. And like, that's cool. But I also think that chasing that, especially in 2024, means that you have to write a specific kind of book. And for Black authors, that in and of itself can be really difficult. Just not going to touch on that, but y'all know what I'm trying to say. The unspoken part. I'm not going to say it out loud. But yeah. But since we mentioned Twilight and you having your bio that you were a Twilight era reader, I have to ask. Edward or Jacob?
I was like, look, anyone who knows me knows definitely Edward. I'm sorry. My next book is a wolf book. So I do also love wolves, in case that repairs the hurt of saying that I'm Team Edward.
They said, in case it repairs the hurt. It doesn't, but I appreciate the effort and I will accept reparations. Thanks. I will look forward to the book.
Oh my God. I do. The wolves are great. They're great. And I also, I see the appeal of Team Jacob. I see the appeal. It's valid. It's so valid. But also, I love vampires.
Fair. I will say that. Edward had, you know, the vampires going for him. But also, his brother, Jasper, was like literally a Civil War Confederate soldier.
Speaking of things that maybe shouldn't have been in the book.
Possibly. Yeah,
that yeah. Someone should have flagged. And like, hey, do you mean what we think you mean?
You mean they're all cool with the people who lost the war? It's interesting because it's like, in certain aspects, they're literally stuck in that era that they become vampires in. It's like, so we're just hanging out with him. We have no questions. Not a one. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Mm-hmm. Cool. But I was always Team Jacob because I was like, I don't know, he actually likes you. And he's like not an ice cold rock. Maybe. Maybe. Because he takes you on dates. You should maybe give him a chance. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Okay. Edward just kind of watches you sleep. That's kind of creepy. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's all valid.
No arguments are being put forth.
No, I have none. I have no defense for myself except for that I like vampires.
Vampires. I'm with you. But, and also Laz with us, vampires. I get it. Slight technical difficulties, but we are back, you guys. And since we were talking about Twilight, I did want to ask you if there was anything from that era of like reading, writing that you like carried with you into adulthood or your future writings, other than the vampires and the paranormal.
The vampires and the paranormal always be with me. I mean, other books from that era that I really loved, like Blood and Chocolate, Wolf Book. And then I don't know, like Anne Rice, so my mom actually, despite the fact that she's very conservative, also loves vampires and loves Anne Rice movies, and so introduced me to Queen of the Damned, which is a rated R movie, when I was like, I think like 14 or 15, which is, you know, people contain multitudes. Queen of the Damned stuck with me so much, I think, because it was really the first time I had seen a Black woman be amazing and attractive and powerful in a paranormal setting. So I think, like, even though she's the villain, everyone, like literally everyone who watches this movie loves her. Like, you watch the movie for her, she's the queen. And so I think, I don't know, like Queen of the Damned still, it takes up so much space in my brain. I literally, when I was giving my cover artist references for the cover, I included a picture of Aaliyah, mm-hmm, in that role, because it was just so mind-blowing and foundational for me. So I don't know, I feel like that's something that really made me love the genre. I was like, oh, we're here too. We are here too, actually. So that's just other things that I love from that era.
I'm glad, like, it's that, so many good things. Okay. I love that moment when it's like, we're here too, especially when it comes to fantasy, because so many times, especially growing up, it's like, you know, the Black character is relegated to, you know, being the magical Negro, where it's just like, you show up and you solve the protagonist's problems, but you don't actually get an arc. You don't actually get a happy ending. You don't actually get anything good happening to you. And for a lot of times, it's like, why are you helping this person? Like, they don't care about you, homie. Like, where is this going? Right? So it's always nice when you have a piece of, I don't say fiction, but like just anything where it's just like, no, it's not about being the sidekick. It's like, in this role as an individual, you are amazing. That is, I feel like the first thing that you find like that is like, becomes super groundbreaking and like foundational, like you said, and just like the thing that you carry with you. And you're like, yeah, I'm trying to give someone else this moment that I had, you know? So at least that's how I think. Maybe I am alone in that, but either way, I got so distracted by this pop-up on the screen. I am so sorry.
No, you're all good. Also, you are correct. I agree with you.
Thank you. It's nice to be, nice to know that I am not alone. But as a whole, you know, we've talked about, you know, the genre and the things that you've carried into it. But, you know, what, I guess, kind of brought you to specifically sapphic fantasy? Because, like you said, mentioned earlier, you know, you had a lot of pushback in getting into this when you were in your programs, right? So what ultimately was like, okay, I hear what you're saying, but no, I'm going to do what I want.
Yeah, I mean, the books that made me want to be a writer were always, it was always speculative fiction. It was always fantasy. It was always like paranormal romance. And so, you know, like that's the portfolio that I submitted because I was like, if you have a bias against genre work, I want to know up front. And so when I submitted my portfolio to my MFA, I did submit, you know, like contemporary fantasy work. And so I expected, even though they accepted me, I did expect a little bit of pushback just because academia. But I think like there was no way that I was going to stop writing this because it's what I've always wanted to do. And then let's see the second part of your question. I feel like it was very natural. I was like, I don't know, the straight romances aren't doing it for me. You know?
That's valid. That's a valid response.
Yeah, like sometimes I would be like, I guess he's fine. You know? And so I honestly, like, writing this book was like a big part of my, because I identified as queer already. And then writing and the process of like revising this book was like an epiphany. I was like, oh, I am in fact a lesbian. Hence why my body of work is like this, which should have been obvious, but wasn't to me at the time. And so then I was like, okay, this is who I am and this is where I am with my work. And I'm, you know, like I want to write the books that I just don't see a lot of. I've talked about this a lot with my writer friends in person, where it's like there is sapphic romance, and a lot of what blows up is white sapphic romance, usually contemporary, sometimes paranormal. And so I felt like my work fell into this valley that no one is really paying attention to. I feel like queer work by queer authors of color generally just, you know, does not get the attention that it deserves. And there's amazing stuff out there. And then within romance, you know, same problems as you see in every other genre. Mm-hmm. But I was like, for once, I want to read about what if Black women fall in love and they're supernatural, mm-hmm. which, you know,
it's not crazy.
Like, it's not, but traditional publishing, sometimes I feel like I am like really,
yeah.
You really have to search to find the few that are there, especially just like anything that is Black and sapphic. I feel like a lot of times I was jumping over into horror, mm-hmm. not necessarily in romance, mm-hmm. but because a lot of vampire stuff is horror. So yeah. A lot of the that I found that were, you know, like that I love, that were inspirations to me, were not necessarily in the romance genre. But yeah, really, it just comes down to like, I just really want to see myself, like my identity in a book. So that's really why the sapphic paranormal romance. Yeah.
I got you. And honestly, that makes perfect sense because I feel like at the end of the day, as authors, we all kind of like at the root want to write the things that we want to read, and we want to write the things that reflect our lived experiences, no matter what they are. Even if we take them supernatural, we take them paranormal, we add some seasoning to it, right? But either way, it's just like at the end of the day, you still want to see something that is going to bring you joy. You want to write something that is fun for you, and you want other people to enjoy it, because the reality of it is, you know, we're not alone, right? There are people who are going to read it and pick it up and be like, this is exactly what I'm looking for, because I'm literally looking here at the comment and lobbing like, yes, such a mood. And it's just like, yeah, like you need all aspects of it. And, you know, like you mentioned, just kind of being limiting yourself to reading what traditional publishing is putting out is going to, in so many ways, disappoint, because for most of it, there are exceptions. I'm not going to say that there aren't. But for most of traditional publishing, it kind of revolves around, you know, cisgender, heterosexual, white couples. You know, you're not going to see too much off of that, right? Even if it is, you know, sometimes a Black author writing the story, there's 9 times out of 10 still going to be a white love interest. That's just kind of how traditional publishing kind of leans. It's getting better, right? I'm going to acknowledge that. But it is still not at the point where, like you said, books that go much further outside of that norm, right? Where you have, like you said, 2 Black women who are falling in love and being magical, or 2 Black men who are falling in love and being magical, or any combination of queerness in the story, they still don't get as much love and attention as, like you said, they deserve, because people like to say, oh, we're not a monolith, but I feel like that's so often only applied to when it's convenient, you know? But I, like I said at the beginning of this, I am a huge fan of your work and what I have read so far. La is in the chat, so slight plug to her stuff, because hers is also very Black, very sapphic, very fantasy, and I am excited for her because she's also a terrific writer. And it's just kind of like, I am in the camp where I'm like, if you're a good writer and you're doing the work and your character is well developed and your world is well developed and your writing is on point, I want to see more people reading your book. I want to see excellence being celebrated and more people having open minds to everything and not just being like, oh, I'm not going to read this because it's not about me. Everything's not about you, Susan. Okay? Calm down.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. I did say earlier that I was like, men, maybe not. But the thing is, I was like, I read so much straight white paranormal romance.
Yeah.
So much. And so I'm just, and like, I love those books and I love those characters. And so it is absolutely baffling to me when like straight people or white people are like, oh, I can't relate to the protagonist. And I'm like, look, most of my like early reading history was only white characters, only straight characters.
Yep.
And if I can love those books and relate to those characters, I think you can also relate to literally anyone. This is just an excuse.
Honestly, if I run into anyone and they're like, I couldn't relate to the character, I'm like, okay, well, you're emotionally stunted. And I suggest you seek therapy for that, because you're telling me that you lack the ability to think outside of yourself. That's a problem. You should not be, and I'm talking for adults here, teenagers, I'll give you a pass, because you're still figuring out the world. And if you're under your parents, depending on how they are, you probably still have a lot of internalized things that come with being in someone else's house in your formative years, right? But once you get out in the world and you start thinking for yourself, I started forming opinions for who you present yourself to be after that point. And it's just kind of like, it's such an offensive thing, but in so many ways it's so offensive, because it's like, you can't relate to me, and for my entire formative years I was forced to have to relate to you. I think it always comes up in this conversation when people talk about writing outside of their perspective, right? And usually I'm be problematic here, so if you're listening to this, just be prepared for that. And usually, in my experience, it's usually a white author who wants to write about something that they know absolutely nothing about. And they're like, well, why can't I write a Black woman? And it's just like, because you're not a Black woman. And more likely than not, you don't know more than 5 Black women that would actually call you a friend. So you have no basis for saying that you have the knowledge necessary to write this character. And on top of that, no one asks for it. You're bringing watercress salad to a cookout and nobody knows what's in it. Like, please don't. Like, you can keep that. It's okay. It's okay. Right? But in that same breath, they'll be like, well, why is it okay for this Black woman to write a white character? It's like, well, we live around them. We work around them. Like, we are forced to be in your spaces, but you are not forced to be in ours. And when you are, you don't pay attention to it. You don't appreciate it. You don't observe it. You are, like, trying to get out of it in the quickest way possible, right? Speaking in generics, right? If it doesn't apply to you, if the shoe doesn't fit, don't wear it, right? But at the same time, it's like the vast majority of people fall into this. And it's just kind of like, you say these things and then it's like, but I can't relate to you. But I can't relate to a character, an angel, falling in love with a demon, right? Only if they're Black. If these were white characters, you would have absolutely no problem with it. And so I'm like, that is really weird. Like, the darker their skin gets, the dumber you get. That's wild. But I'm done being problematic now. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. I would like more diversity and for more people to actually think critically and think about what they're saying and to actually read diversely before being like, oh, I couldn't relate because whatever reason. But I'm off my soapbox.
It was a good one. It's a good soapbox.
Well, thank you. I have very strong opinions about things. It's part of the reason why I'm very much like, I support Black authors in everything that they, everything that they do and everything that they write, because I'm like, being Black and a creative is usually, for a lot of us, we are going against the grain, right? Because a lot of us were raised in environments where it's like, you need something practical to sustain you.
Yes.
This is a hobby. Yes. This is not a career. And when you're like, no, it's a career, it becomes that much harder, but then you enter into it at some point, right? You may be disillusioned to some extent going into it, but the fantasy really kind of shatters when you step into it and you're like, okay, I just want a fair shot because I know I have this skill, and they don't give it to you simply because you decided to give your character melanin and curly hair. And now it's a problem. It's not about your prose. It's not about your world building. It's not about your craft. It's not about your pacing. It's not about your development. It's not about anything else in the book. It's about the fact that this character is brown. When? Why? Mm-hmm. You know? And I want to see more authors thrive, especially since, you know, in the age of the internet, there are so many readers who are like, I want to read diversely. I want to read this. I want to read a book about, you know, a sad angel who falls in love with a demon. You know, it's like, okay, well, I have a recommendation for you. No, you're not going to get it from one of the big five, but you can get it straight from the author and it's going to be amazing. It's going to blow your mind. And there are more people who are realizing that they can read indie, and indie books are good and in some cases better. And it's just like, yeah, welcome to the club. Like, you're starting to realize it. And it's crazy because traditional publishing is starting to realize it too. And so I'm always curious how that's going to change the landscape going forward. But, you know, only time will tell. Only time will tell.
I mean, they keep snapping up indie authors, you know,
left and right, like Pokemon.
So, like, clearly we're doing well.
Clearly we are doing something right. And I hope that this continues to open the door for more Black stories that are authentically Black, that are just like, this is what the book is supposed to be. Like, I want to get to a space where authors are going into conversations being like, this is my book. This is what it will be. This is what I'm not compromising on. Now, you can represent me or not, but if you don't, I'm still going to make money left or right. So, you know, essentially, you can ride this bandwagon or not, right? I would love that kind of agency versus this idea that if you get in, you're lucky and suck it up, buttercup, because you got your chance, right? But again, I'm talking like I've ever been traditionally published. Haven't, but I've talked to enough people and I've had the fortunate of chance to see kind of both sides of it, right? And it's just kind of like, I think there is value in traditional publishing, but I also want to see it change. I want to see it diversify. I want to see it acknowledge that there are so many authors out here putting in work that is more than just, like you said, very heteronormative white stories in any genre, you know? Mm-hmm. And don't even get me started on YA, because that's a whole other rant, but.
Yeah, yeah. One thing that's been very interesting to me, though, is the books that I find that are most like mine are all YA. They're not adult. And I think that definitely says something about the fact that I just don't see adult titles, like adult Black sapphic paranormal romance getting the same attention that YA does. It's an interesting market thing to me.
Y'all see what Tamara is trying to do. Trying to open up the floodgates. Because it's something that we talk about a lot in our Discord server, how YA is being forced into like this upper age range, right? To appeal to, you know, 18, 17, 18, 19 year olds, when it's supposed to be appealing to 14, 15, 16 year olds. And because of that, there's this overlap where people are like, oh, is this YA? Is this adult?
It's like upper YA is the, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just kind of like, what does that mean? And it's like, and people have brought up the point that new adult should exist as a genre, as a category, right? Because there is crossover between young adult and adult fiction. And because there's not, they keep trying to force young adult to fit this genre that new adult should have. And now there's an entire gap of, okay, you're like 12. You're getting too old for middle grade, right? Or let's say you're 15. You're way too old for middle grade. That stuff doesn't appeal to you anymore. But you are also not at the point where you're reading the stuff that's appropriate for a 19-year-old, because that gap is just as big as the gap for between an 11 and a 15-year-old is the same age gap between 15 and 19. The mental state is not the same. But now there are no books for the one in the middle, right? Because everything's for the 19-year-old who really could be and should be reading adult. Like, can we talk about how life would be so much easier for a lot of readers if there was actually like a space for you to continue reading once you aged out of young adult fiction? Like, if there was a space in Barnes and Noble or any bookstore or any library where it's like, okay, here's the middle grade, here's the young adult, here's the new adult, here's the adult stuff. And it's like, okay, these characters are still doing the things that I want them to do. They're still young-ish, but they're adults. They're that frontal lobe has come in a little bit. They've started actually thinking about some of these decisions before they like decide to go on this journey to hunt demons or whatever, right? They're like, I don't know, man. I got class. Frontal lobe, thinking about things a little bit, right? But also, you're not ready for that, oh, I'm, you know, 35 years old and still single, or I'm 40 years old with a mortgage and what I'm dealing with in my life is completely different, right? It's cool to fill in the gap, but I'm gonna get off my soapbox because I, like I said, I have very strong opinions, and it's part of the reason why I love indie, because you can do what you want. Because I always tell people that my book, it's new adult. Like, it's technically an adult book. It's not YA. There are a lot of people who are in that YA age range who can pick up the book and read it. There are teenagers who like it, but there are also factually can actually prove this, like women in their like 60s who enjoy this too. So it's just like, it's for adults. But I mean, if you want to sneak in, that's fine, but I'm not going to tell you it's a young adult book, you know?
Yes,
not for marketing purposes, and not for Oh, cash grab, YA is the big thing. I actually don't want to be caught up in your hype, because then you're going to get into the book expecting something and it's not going to be that, and then you're going to hate it. No thank you. But that being said, if you are still listening to this podcast, I highly recommend that you go get The Fall That Saved Us, right? I recommend that you go get my books, We Are the Origin and We Are Dying Gods. And then I recommend that you continue down this indie fantasy journey, because I promise you, it will not disappoint. You will find something that's going to blow your mind and your expectations. And you're going to look at yourself one day when you're going to close the book, you're going to sit there in a quiet room and be like, why haven't I been doing this my entire life? And I'm not going to have an answer for you, but you're welcome. So, that being said, we are coming up on the end of this podcast. So, Tamara Jarae, can you tell us what is coming up next for you?
Yeah, so hopefully, I don't have a firm release date yet, but spring this year, I have my Wolf Shifter novella coming out. So there will be a cover reveal, hopefully happening end of March. This book is called A Wolf Steps in Blood. So we've got a blood witch who's exiled. We've got a wolf shifter who can't really get a hold on her shifting and the fact that she is a wolf and her struggle to accept that. So some disastrous road trip stuff. Yeah, I had so much fun writing this. I wrote it before I published The Fall That Saved Us. So it is very much still a weird blend of things that is probably not the most marketable thing, but I love it. So I'm looking forward to sharing it with y'all.
It sounds amazing. I am looking forward to it. And I agree with Law that I need this in my life immediately. And if you're listening to this podcast, I can assure you that you need it in your life too. I don't know your life, but I know that you need this in it. So just go to Amazon, follow Tamara Jarae so that you know when the book drops, and then we're all going to buy it and support it and read it and talk about it together. Okay? That is the plan. Glad we established that. That being said, one thing that I like to ask to everyone who comes on the podcast is, what writing advice would you give to any new authors starting out on their writing journey? So people who are listening to this who are just like, they haven't taken the plunge yet, or they just took the plunge and they're like, okay, I'm writing a book. Where do I go from here?
I mean, I think the most important thing is to always just write what you love and listen to your heart. I know this is very, I'm a Pisces, this is very touchy-feely advice, but I just feel like having that passion is what's going to like propel you to like actually getting to the end of the book, actually editing the book, actually preparing the book for publication. It's just like writing something that you have put your whole heart into. And then also just like, you know, finding the advice that speaks to you, that works for you, and not feeling pressured to do everything or to do things a certain way, you know, just because someone said it.
I second all of that advice, especially the part about writing what you love and are passionate about, because you're going to read that book more than anybody else. I hope you love it. Second of all, you know, if you are passionate about it, that passion is going to transfer to the pages. It's like, it's going to show. It's going to show in how you market the book, how you talk about the book, how you react when other people read it. It's going to affect how you focus on it. You know, if you love the book and you're proud of the book, you're going to focus on the good versus being caught up in the negative. But that's a conversation for another day. The point is, listen to everything that Tamara Jarae said. And yeah. If you could please let the people know where they can find you on the interwebs, I will close us out.
Yeah, so I am Tamara Jarae on Twitter, on Instagram, and on my underused Blue Sky. And yeah, website also, just tamarajarae.com.
All right. And y'all already know that there'll be links to it in the place where you get them from. So look for that. And that is it for this episode of the Written in Melanin podcast, you guys. If you'd like to support this podcast, then please share it with someone you think may enjoy it. Join my Patreon at patreon.com/writteninmelanin, or grab a copy of my books from my website, cmlockhart.com. There are links in the show notes for everything, or the description box if you're on YouTube. And thank you guys again for listening. Until next time, I hope all your books are full of melanin. Bye, you guys.